I'll ask the marshal to call us in.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bratfold, Judge Cochran, Judge Wheelock, the Honorable Diane B. Bratfold presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date is July 14th, 2022. We have five appeals on our calendar today. One of those is an oral argument, and I see the lawyers in front of me. I'll make just a few, here's what I'll do. I will ask the marshal to call that case so that a record is clear, and then I'll make a few comments.
Now calling A22-0450, in re the matter of Michael Wortman et al. Appellants and the Commissioner of Crystal Bay Township respondent, Janet Rothbart respondent.
Right, and I think everyone's aware, you know, this matter is proceeding by Zoom. And our procedures, though, really remain the same, with the exception of the fact that we are recording the proceedings through the Zoom platform. An audio recording, actually, is what's made available on the court's website, and that's the only recording that's allowed of these proceedings. But all our other rules and procedures remain the same. We very much appreciate counsel coming today and appearing before us and presenting your case. It always helps us. And we just want to call a couple of things to your attention, because we do include a recording as part of our record. We ask you, before you start your remarks, to identify yourself as well as the client that you represent before you start your arguments. And then you should have visible on your screen the timing for today's arguments, and you should be aware of it. I want to comment briefly on that. Appellant, of course, has the usual 15 minutes, but we have two separate clients and counsels, counsel for respondents, and you've, I've been informed, have agreed to split your time with Mr. Smith going first with 10 minutes, and Ms. Clune, you're going second with 5. And then, of course, appellant has the optional 5-minute rebuttal if the appellant so chooses. So do keep your eye on the clock. It tends to go fairly quickly. We very much enjoy our conversations with you and look forward to hearing from you. So with that, I think we're ready. Counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Patrick Deneen. I represent the appellants Michael and Cindy Wortman. I see one of the windows on my screen has a observer under the name of Cindy. I'm quite certain that Michael and Cindy Wortman are zoomed in here with us today as well. I'm going to warn all three of you, I've had 3 cups of coffee this morning, and I have a tendency to talk fast. I'm not at all offended or opposed to any of you giving me a slow down hand signal as I go if I get too much momentum going. I've got a lot to say to you today. I want to first, the case we have for you this morning is a Cartway case. My client is the affected landowner. My client advocated both at the township level and later in the appeal of that proceeding to the district court, that consideration should have been given to an alternate route. And the alternate route is an already built, already existing road that the Rothbarts have, not only the Rothbarts, but all of their predecessors have used to access what was an old schoolhouse, the ruins of which are on the Rothbart parcel. And that's the namesake of the public road that provides access into this area. This is a very remote rural area of Lake County, Minnesota. I want to first talk a little bit about the case law from this honorable court, the Court of Appeals, on the express and implied rights of a lower subdivision to condemn a higher up subdivision of government. And then I want to talk a little bit about the statutory framework of how forest roads are defined, and that really the easiest way for this court to perhaps decide the case is based on Minnesota statutes 89.71, which defines that a state forest road is defined not by the road top surface width, but by the actual use, which includes ditching and maintained areas. And there's no dispute here that there's already an existing road right next to where the Rothbarts want to clear and build on my client's property. If I have time, I'll circle back to that statute, but I want to focus as much of my time as I can on the cases that I would call the court's attention to. And I think it's important that the court be made aware, in addition to the cases that the parties have cited, there's one additional case that I don't think any of us did cite that.
Okay. So counsel, let me ask you to pause for a second. And here's what I just want to make sure I understand correctly. And if I'm not correct, you know, please help me out. So it sounds like you're focusing your argument on in the same way that you did in front of the township board on this alternate route over the DNR land. Am I right? So
I wasn't personally representing the Wortmans that point,
so
but that is the position the Wortmans took, correct?
All right. And so, which suggests to me that the statutory requirements for ordering a cartway, which of course apply here since a cartway was ordered, that those have been satisfied. And I think you're familiar with what I mean. The basic findings of the township board were, you know, sufficient to meet that part of the statute, so that this is a owner of the land and no access over the land of others and things like that. So it sounds like we're instead on that part of the statute that deals with alternate routes. Do I have that right?
I'm not sure what the question is. I acknowledge that I don't acknowledge that the property was landlocked, because this access is the access that Rothbart has always used, this existing road.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I wasn't positive what your position was based on your brief. And I'll be honest that the reason I said it the way I did is really relying on the district court's decision stated it that way. The district court's was quite clear that that the Wortmans did not challenge the statutory requirements for establishing a cartway. Are you familiar with that part of the district court decision? Or
yes, I think I'm looking at that. I think that's on page 4, Judge.
Right. And so I didn't see that you challenged that in your brief. So I'm confused about why you're going to be challenging it now. Yeah.
I think I do understand your question, and I would trace that issue back to at the township level, and there's an exchange that occurs between Ms. Rothbart's counsel and Mr. Wortman, my client, at the township level, and that is my client suggesting to the board, let's get the DNR involved in this, and Ms. Rothbart's counsel represents to the board that we've already contacted the DNR, they won't allow access, there's no solution for access because this is DNR land. The township accepted that as fact, the district court accepted that as fact. As I've pointed out in my brief and also included in the record is my client's request for reconsideration at the township level. There's a theme here where we've urged an answer to that question of what is the DNR's position on this? And when we've never been provided anything of what they were contacted, but there is one thing in the record that the DNR was contacted.
So Mr. Dineen, I'm sorry. It seems to me like you're jumping to, again, over to this alternate route of the DNR land. And I'm still a bit confused because, you know, just a few seconds ago, you said this is not landlocked, but if the only access is through the DNR land, that's the finding, you know, that's the evidence that was submitted. And of course, the finding was that there is no access other than through the land of over the land of others. So I'm confused. So help me out.
Well, Schoolhouse Creek Road goes through the Finland State Forest, which is managed by the DNR. So that's the DNR land that we're talking about. So the Wortmans, their access is over the DNR land, over Schoolhouse Creek Road.
And that's the land of others, right? Isn't it? I mean, I'm confused.
That's one of the issues here. So under the Cartway statute, the land of others, there's a question there as to whether the state of Minnesota is in or out of that statutory definition of the land of others.
I don't see where you've ever briefed that, counsel. I don't see where that was raised. I mean, and the district court clearly didn't think it was raised. You know, and I'd refer you to page 5, actually, of the district court's decision. District court says, plaintiffs, referring to the Wortmans, do not challenge the township's decision to establish a cartway for access, that the requirements for establishing a cartway are met. And instead, rather, plaintiffs challenge the township's decision to select the route petitioned. that that's the issue that was raised to the district court. That's how I read everything that was submitted as well. And the shift I saw were in a couple passages of your appellant's brief, and they confused me, quite honestly, because it sounds like a new argument on appeal.
Okay, well, let me back up. Part of the statutory framework is also that the township board has to consider the route that is the least disruptive to the affected landowners and in the public's best interest. And that's the basis of why the Wortmans proposed the existing route, is because it's clearly the least disruptive. It doesn't require any removal of trees or construction or any changes to the area. It's already there. It exists. And in that respect, it's in the public interest as well, not just the Wortmans. Our position is both the township and then the district court only focused on what's in Rothbart's interest and did not consider the least disruptive route or the public interest. That's our position.
And I understand you definitely stated, and I'm sorry, Judge Cochran or Judge, maybe who interrupted,
but go ahead.
I understand that you have clearly stated a challenge on this alternate route and that, no question about that. The court will review that. Judge Cochran, go right ahead if you've got a question.
I just wanted to turn to the issue of the alternate route. And it seems to me, counsel, that you're arguing that the county had the obligation to ask the DNR to to participate in the township proceeding, hearing, and to affirmatively reach out to the DNR to determine whether DNR would consent to an easement over that property. Is that correct?
I would agree with that. And that's what Mr. Wortman proposed at that initial township meeting that he appeared at.
So what statutory language imposes the duty on the township to have communicate or to ask the DNR to participate in the hearing and to ask the DNR whether the DNR would consent? I guess, you know, and given that the Wortmans were proposing this alternative, wouldn't the natural reading of the statute suggests that the Wortmans would have the burden to demonstrate whether or not that alternative route was feasible and whether or not the DNR would consent to an easement over that property?
I would disagree with the end of that would be the township's obligation once that issue is raised. So when a cartway petition is filed, the petitioner gets to cast out there in its petition the proposed route. And if there's no opposition, then presumably a township is generally going to approve that if it makes the correct findings. But when an affected landowner, not just a member of the public, but one of the actual affected landowners comes forward and proposes an alternative route, then the township should then consider the alternative route. And then there's that balancing test that comes into play that would not be in play if there was only one unopposed route. And that balancing test is, what is the least disruptive, the least impact, and what best serves the public interest? And here, that analysis was not done by the township or by the district court, because everyone has assumed all along, contradictory to what the record shows, which there's an affidavit from Wortman that he contacted the DNR early on. They were never contacted by anyone about this. And so both the township and the district court relied on a representation of counsel that the DNR had no solution for access. It's not an option. So we're only going to focus on this one option and not even bother to engage that two-part test.
The statute, though, is discretionary, correct, in terms of selection of an alternative.
I agree with that. So the position we took with the district court, and I believe it's identified or repeated in the court's order on the cross motions for summary judgment, is that I'll readily acknowledge I could not hit the district court over the head, and I can't hit any of you over the head, that you need to remand this with instructions to approve the alternate route. That's not what we're seeking. What I do want to hit you over the head with is the law that when an alternate route is proposed, then there's that balancing test that I already spoke of. And that never happened here because it's been assumed all along right up to today. And I'm concerned now that this court is now assuming as true too, that there, we don't need to give any consideration to this alternate route because either the DNR says no, which the record doesn't reflect that, or because it was the Wortmann's obligation to bring the DNR into this as a party, which they attempted to do at that initial meeting that they appeared at.
So, counsel, if Judge Cochran, is it all right if I follow up on that? Because I just want to clarify, when you say that once an alternate route is proposed, the town board must consider it, I'm struggling with your authority for that, given selection of an alternate route is discretionary. And you concede that. I think what you might be arguing, but I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, is that it would be arbitrary and capricious for a town board not to consider an alternate route that is presented to them. Is that what you're arguing?
I would agree that it's arbitrary when an affected landowner or even just a member of the public, since that balancing test contemplates the public's best interest, comes forward and proposes an alternate route that it invokes both the arbitrary and capricious aspect of this, but it also invokes that two-part test that the townships are supposed to use of weighing which is the least disruptive and in the public's best interest. Because this
I'm just watching your time, and I just want to make sure that you understand where my questions to you focus so that you can think about it for your rebuttal. So I understand, you know, that there is an analysis that goes into an alternate route if it is considered by the township board or any other entity granting a cartway. And we don't have all of the details in the minutes that are presented for this board, but we do have minutes. We do have just findings from our district court after reviewing those minutes that the township did consider the Wortmann's alternative proposal. They considered it twice, including after the record had been corrected about the DNR's contact, you know, over this cartway, and that both times the town board rejected the alternate proposal and instead selected the established cartway per the petition that was submitted. And so I guess I don't see no consideration on this record. There is consideration and it's rejected. So I need to understand from you where your analysis goes next. And I see your time's up. If you want to respond briefly right now, that's fine, but you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure. And I'll keep it real short here. My response to that is that was an error of law, both by the township and then by the district court to just accept that it wasn't an option. And when Your Honor says that there was a second time that it came up, I don't know if now or when I get my rebuttal, you might elaborate on that. I don't know what you're referring to. The only time I'm aware of in the record is when Mr. Wortmann brings it up and then Rothbard's counsel says...
I'll be very clear with you because I would like to hear your comments on it. The minutes from the town meeting, and I believe the minutes is it 119, I think 21? I'll look it up if you need it. But the minutes from the town meeting before the final cartway order is issued indicate that they did consider the Wortmann's correction of the record as to, you know, contact to the DNR of the DNR. So I am confused about your argument about this board not considering all the facts that have been presented to it on the alternate route. So with that, I think I will cut you off and ask you to respond in your rebuttal time. So thank you, counsel. All right. I think we've reset the clock then for you, Mr. Smith, and you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. I am Tyson Smith up here in Grand Marais for respondent Crystal Bay Township. Judge Ratfold, you asked a question which highlighted a point which I was eager to make, which was there was in fact consideration for the alternate route. I have found this discussion.
Just to be clear, I'm not making a point for you. I'm asking questions of appellant's counsel. I have the same questions for you. So go right ahead. Yeah,
I understand. we're not asking for a particularly novel concept here. There's a state statute which forbids the township to grant a cartway over the route requested. The township...
You're relying on this 89.18, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, go right ahead.
The town recognized they cannot grant a cartway over state land. Folks up in Lake County are somewhat familiar with this. The silver cases from Lake County, as are some of those that follow it.
Well, now the silver case didn't say, make the comment about state forest land, did it?
No, you are correct. It's a wildlife management area. But I think the distinction from silver, which is interesting here today, is the implied authority exists where the state has not put the land to a specific use or to a use which would be inconsistent with the right of passage. So a wildlife management area certainly should not have a public road through it, just like a state forest should not. An example where it could would be...
Well, Council, does the record reflect that there's already a road there?
The record reflects in the survey created by Bruce Chernak that there was a trail. We would love very much to interpret, the petitioners would have, and to some degree the township, because they're here, would have loved for that trail to have been deemed an existing road of record. But the surveyor didn't think so, and there isn't any other evidence in the file that would show that the existing route is in fact a road of record.
Can I follow up on that, your argument about section 89.18? You rely on the language that no state forest lands or right or easement therein shall be taken by eminent domain for any purpose without the consent of the commissioner. But that language is included in a section dealing with the establishment of highways. So does it apply in this instance where the township is establishing a cartway?
It's a good question. I have always believed a highway to be a route over which the public may pass, and a cartway is a route over which the public may pass, so I do not see a distinction between those two terms.
Thank you.
You asked another very on-point question, Judge Cochran, about whether or not the township should have reached out to the DNR to seek permission on behalf of one side or the other. It's the township's position, I don't think I'm saying anything too unusual here, that the town is acting as a legislative body in a quasi-legislative function. It's not the township's job to go advocate for one party or the other. They sit, view the facts they're given with to the extent that they find their own facts from their site visit. They make a ruling on that. I think it would be inappropriate, frankly, for the township to take that role. Both parties were, of course, well within their right to bring in other parties and serve the notice of hearing on anyone they thought would have been interested. That could have happened here. It didn't.
Can I ask a question related to that? Does the record reflect that there was public notice of this meeting? In other words, the DNR could have been aware of the meeting through general public notice?
See, Ms. Clune nodding, I don't have the site for you, but I know that notice was published and personally served, and publishing would have happened in the town's regular posting places. I can't represent to you whether it was published in a legal newspaper also, because I don't remember.
Okay. But in your view, the fact that this meeting was a decision was a quasi-legislative decision rather than a quasi-judicial decision is important in terms of the role of the township and any obligation to affirmatively contact the DNR.
That is correct. And I agree the distinction between those two is subtle but important here. If it was truly a quasi-judicial decision, there would be absolutely no discretion on the part of the township. They serve as the fact finder and the decision maker, full stop. Quasi-legislative, I think, gives them a bit more room. They're acting in a rulemaking capacity to make a decision on behalf of the public, because a cartway in the end is a public road. Of course, it benefits a private person, but it's a public road. And that's why I suspect the road order statute specifies that the town should go inspect the road so that the independent decision makers have some information firsthand from the facts on the ground. But I believe it would be a step too far to require the township to advocate on behalf of one party or the other. I don't see that as the role of government in the legislative capacity. One thing we didn't talk about at all in the appellant's arguments was the measure of damages. This is a partial takings case. The judge excluded, Judge Cuzzo excluded quite a bit of irrelevant evidence. And I just want to follow up on, summarize my briefing on that issue. The question really here is what evidence is relevant to value? And of course, as a partial takings case, this is the value of the land before the taking, less the value of the land after. The difference is your diminution, that's your severance damage. What the appellants did their best to argue at the motions in limine was that the measure of damages should be the price per square foot of the land taken, plus they should be reimbursed for their improvement and maintenance costs to the road within the cartway area, plus they should be reimbursed for the trees which should be removed as perhaps necessary in the taking. The Judge Cuzzo very properly excluded that as irrelevant. It's true each one of those things could be a factor an appraiser considers in their determination of what the after value is, but you don't just get to add in these additional costs into your after value, or when I say add in, I guess what I'm talking about is subtracting. The district court saw through that and rejected it. Of course, trying to turn your jurors into appraisers by giving them these independent pieces of evidence which an appraiser would consider would be terribly confusing. And the solution to that, of course, for the appellants was to present their own appraisal. They could have done that. They were notified at least once, and they had ample opportunity throughout the pendency of this matter to do that because it was a de novo trial on damages. Their decision is their own, but you can't put the pieces of an appraisal in front of a jury and expect to turn your jurors into experts. It would be very confusing and very prejudicial, which would be another basis for exclusion on this record. I think I've made my point. I would reserve my last two or so minutes for any rebuttal if necessary, but I will rest on the briefing we've made.
Right. Does anyone on the panel have questions for Mr. Smith? All right, thank you. And Mr. Smith, we could add your time to Ms. Clune's time if you'd like. Let's see if that's possible. And we could do it at the end as well.
I'll defer to the court's preference and pleasure on that.
Looks like we've done it. So Ms. Clune, you can go ahead when you're ready.
Yes, Kelly Clune, Clune Law Firm, Ely, Minnesota, on behalf of Lily Rothbart. For the court, my brief is short. I really rely on the township's briefing of these legal issues. But I think my client just wants to clarify or has requested that I clarify the takings issue. From our standpoint, in my knowledge of Cartway and my cases of handling Cartway in the past, a township board would not have the ability to grant a cartway over this state land. And I think Mr. Smith has sufficiently briefed the issue.
I'll ask you about that, Ms. Clune, because I think that district court's analysis of that really turned on the Silver case, which does not say that you absolutely, that it could not be granted. It says that there is no express, authority to take state land. Does not address the statute that Mr. Smith has cited, 89.18. The Silver case doesn't. And then instead it goes on to look at implied authority in certain contexts to take state land and sets out an analysis for that. And says that on the facts, in the Silver case, there is no implied authority. And Mr. Smith alluded to that too, because that was a wildlife management area. So there was this substantial inconsistency in use. So it's a set of facts that just, boy, it's not in front of us at all in this case. So I don't find Silver all that helpful. And maybe you want to enlighten me if you think I should.
that's the relevant authority that I'm aware of, Judge. Mm-hmm. And I do agree with your analysis on the implied portion of that. And that is really the understanding that I had of the law and the way that I approached the law in this case.
You didn't argue, I don't think, and I don't think the township determined this type of things that were in play in the Silver case, this analysis of substantial inconsistency. That's just not what happened here, right?
That is not what happened. Okay. You're right, Judge.
I just wanted to be clear. All right, thank you.
Yeah. Yep, that is accurate. We really went on the reliance that the common practice and common and knowledge of the law to date indicates that the township, they reviewed the alternative route, but deemed that they did not have authority. I don't want to put words in the township or in the minutes, you know, but that essentially they reviewed this alternative route, and really it's the difference between a trail or consisting or utilizing the existing roadway.
So I just want to pause you for a second there, because I don't see a determination in the Cartway order or a reference to it in the township minutes saying that they rejected the route over the DNR land, the alternate route proposed by the Wartmans, because they had no authority. Right. And so I guess do you want to go there? I mean,
Silver case doesn't hold that,
as we just discussed. So why?
I would withdraw my comments on that. I would withdraw my comments. I would submit that they certainly were aware of the alternative proposal from the Wartmans.
Counsel, I had asked the attorney for the township if there was general public notice of the meeting where the township decided to grant the Cartway, and it appeared that you were nodding your head in response to that question. Does the record reflect that there was notice given of this meeting, public notice?
Yes, Judge, I was trying to point directly to the record of that. I guess I would point to the statutory requirements have been met as deemed by the trial court. Statutory requirements in the Cartway statute, it does require notice and posting on the property. I cannot at this point put my finger on exactly that notification, but it was deemed that statutory requirements were met.
Thank you.
I really stand for questions. Our brief is very short on this matter. We don't have a transcript. That's one of my main concerns relative to reviewing the record. I think Mr. Smith has sufficiently briefed the issues on behalf of the township. So if there's any other questions that the court has from me or that I can answer, I'd be happy to do that.
Any questions for the panel? All right. And thank you, Ms. Clune and Mr. Smith. And please know, you know, we have fully read the briefs in this case, and I hope our questions reflect that. So the fact that you finished a little early just means that we're all understanding your argument and don't have any further questions at this time. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we will reset the clock for appellants. And Mr. Dineen, if you'd like to begin your rebuttal, there we go. You can do that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to shift to talk about the Silver case. And Judge Bradfold, you've said that, I think you've said that's not particularly on point. If I did understand that correctly, and that's a Lake County case, it's decided by this court. Each of Your Honors know that the courts do not generally indulge engaging in analysis that's not necessary to dispose of a case. Ridgeway case, it gets into that issue of whether the proposed use over the DNR land is consistent or inconsistent with the DNR's use, and it finds that it's inconsistent with a wildlife management area. There's a more recent case from this court that I don't think any of us have cited to the court yet. And I want you to be mindful of this as you deliberate the case, because it's another Lake County case that's on point with this same issue and has some similar language. It's In Re Amended Cartway Petition of Edward John Harry or Harry, that's H-A-R-R-I Jr. It's an unpublished case. I can either give you the Court of Appeals number or the Westlaw citation. It's 2018 WL2090854. And so another Lake County case, and even one of the same attorneys, Huck Andreessen, and it's an attempt to get a cartway over not just state land, but University of Minnesota land. And again, this court, not this particular panel, but this court goes into the analysis in that case of whether the proposed use would be consistent or inconsistent with the state's use of its own land. And all of these cases have a common thread that can be traced back to the Minnesota Supreme Court case, Matter of City of Shakopee, that is cited in the briefs, and it's cited by this court in the Ridgeway opinion. That's 295 Northwest 2nd, 495, 1980. And the City of Shakopee case is a very interesting case. I would invite you to at least skim or read that. There's a very interesting analysis in this case where they talk about roads and railroads intersecting each other. And when the railroads came through, they had to condemn not only private, but also public land. And a road crossing a railway is not inconsistent with the use of the railway. And therefore, there can be that implied right of condemnation over public land. Whereas if the road was going to go through the railway depot, that would be a substantial interference and that would not be allowed. That's the case that is the foundation of both the argument in Ridgeway and then more recently in the In Re Harry case. Those cases were decided on this court was very specific in those cases. They indulged that point and on those specific records found that the court would not exercise the implied right to condemn because it would cause an inconsistent use. This is the case that's the distinction. And this is, in essence, the case that this court has contemplated both in Ridgeway and in Harry in including that additional language and analysis about whether a proposed use is consistent or inconsistent. This is perfectly consistent. The DNR has never done anything to barricade or dig up or post or do anything to prevent Rothbart or any member of the public to use that maintained spur coming off of Schoolhouse Creek Road.
Also, with regard to state forest lands, how do you reconcile your argument about an implied right to condemn with the language in 89.18? That the township relies on that says no state forest land shall be taken by eminent domain for any purpose without the consent of the commissioner.
The only thing I can tell you about my own opinion on that is that I recognize the tension between that statute and the line of cases from this court and the 1980 Minnesota Supreme Court cases that I just spoke of. There is a tension there. And in both the Ridgeway case and the Harry case, this honorable court, I think both of them include some language that this may be an issue better left to either the Minnesota Supreme Court or the legislature. This is now the third case that comes before this case, all of them Lake County cases, Ridgeway in 2006, Harry in 2018, and now this case. And this case is distinguishable where this court could take the easy route that I proposed of the statutory definition of a road, that this is there and it's already there because of that. Or
let me just ask you one quick question, because I do see your time is running out. So when you say the Ridgeway case, that's Silver versus Ridgeway. So that case did not involve state forest land, did it?
Yes, it involved DNR land that was designated
DNR
as
land.
A WMA wildlife management area.
Yeah, so, but not state forest land.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right. Well, I think it was Mr. Smith probably knows that. I think it was state forest land.
The record will reflect that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way. Okay.
It had that original additional designation of the WMA that this court found was inconsistent with the road.
Okay. And so with that, Mr. Dineen, I ask you to, wrap up when one sentence, since your time has expired.
And the last thing I want to circle back to is Judge Bradfield. I did look back on the record while I was standing down for other counsel, and I see the September 15th, 2020 minutes. And that's the only place I see where that's where there was the site visit by one member of the board, the three-member board, and then they returned to the township. There's that.
So I looked it up too, and just in case you would like to look at it further, the minutes are from January 19th, 2021, and they indicate on page 2, the township says that they considered the request for reconsideration, the objecting letter written by the Wortmans, and they denied that request because they found no merit to the claims, which again were the alternate route proposed. So
I misunderstood. I thought you were. I'm sorry. I misunderstood that. Thank you for indulging me. I've got a lot more to say, but I'll stand down and shut my mouth now.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And please know, as I mentioned to Respondents Council, we've read all the briefs in this case and very much appreciate what has been submitted to the court, the records detailed. So with that, that concludes our oral argument today. This court will take the matter under advisement. We will issue a decision within the statutory timeframe. So thanks again so much, counsel. That concludes all of our arguments. We only had the one set orally today, and the court will now be in recess for its non-oral comments.
Thank you. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, judges.